This is a Power 98.7 podcast. Now we're talking. Subscribe to Power 98.7 podcasts in iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts. There's more on power987.co.za.
Zwan LM20 is my next guest, economist at UNISA. And what are we talking about? The 53rd annual meeting of world leaders, business and civil society. All the billionaires are there. All the CEOs are there. A lot of politicians are there. Some world leaders are there. Ministers in the abundance are there. And that kicked off on the 16th of January, the other day, 2023. And of course, on that particular opening day, we had an interview with, of course, the International Relations Minister, Naledi Pandor, and she was telling us about what the South African delegation is doing there. Lots of South African business people there. And of course, Brand SA also, I think, leading that particular mission as well, because Brand SA, not in a formal sense, but Brand SA would be taking charge of so many things, because that's the messaging. The messaging would have to come through a particular institution. Brand SA will be that messaging, and Brand SA will open its doors, open its corridors, make its floor open to all the ministers that are there. And there are four ministers who are there. Enoch Godongwana is there. Naledi Pandor is there. The Minister of Tourism is there. Mamoloko Kubai, of course, is also there. And who is it? Trade and Industry is also there. So four ministers in essence that are there. Mzwanele Ntshwanti is an economist at UNISA. So let me bring Mzwanele into the conversation. Mzwanele, welcome to Power 98.7. How are you?
I'm good, sir. How are you?
I'm very, very good. You know, Mzwanele, you're at home. You're in Pretoria. Where are you? In Johannesburg, Pretoria?
yes, I am around Pretoria.
Sure. And you're not in Davos. What happened? You didn't get an invite?
I didn't
get an invite as well. Mzwanele.
talk about youth representation around the things and new voices coming up. You hardly rhetoric, isn't it?
Absolutely. And me and you not getting invites to head off. I joke, but obviously, you know, the World Economic Forum, having been one of those institutions that across the globe every single time this particular year, it's not like it's a United Nations engagement. It's not like it's a United Nations forum or a discussion of any per se. It doesn't even try to behave in that particular way. It has no obvious, you know, footprint like the United Nations would have, or where, you know, conversations are made and people need to follow up. It's a place of networking. It's a place of going and selling yourself. It's a place of showing up and saying, I'm also around, and if you've got money, come in and invest here, because these are the kind of things that we are doing. And, you know, and we're a good place for, you know, tourism. We're a good place for investment. We're a good place, you know, to move your family to if you want to relocate as well. So that's what South Africa would be doing, and that's what Brand SA, in essence, would be doing through their presence as well, because Brand SA would be covering a wide range of issues, not just on the political front, but a wide range of issues. What do you make of the World Economic Front and South Africans' engagement this particular year?
It's quite interesting, actually, when you look at organizations such as the World Economic Forum, because, like you say, from inception, they seemed like we wanted to bring these global leaders, whether in business, government, in the private sector, in the NGOs, and all different sectors, basically, of economies, to sort of share information and sort of like drive the global economy or the world forward. Mm. But of course, over the years, they have become, like you say, an event of international stature and sort of interest. Mm. And I think going forward, they do want to find themselves at that level of UN And other international organizations.
But already, already, Mzwanele, people are talking about their relevance. You know, whether they actually, you know, would be relevant in a global world. You know, where the world is looking at localization, for example, and that's happening a lot. Where people are beginning to say, let's trade locally. And I do know that trade and industry is a big, you know, pushing that particular aspect quite hugely. So trade locally and do your business locally. And here's a forum that looks at globalistic issues, you know, and you know, people are beginning to look inward and their interests and who's next door and what can we get from the person right next door. So you've got those two issues that are really opposing, and people are beginning to say, what is the World Economic Forum in a globalistic conversation, and why are they still around, and what relevance do they still have? What is the relevance that they still have?
As I was about to say that, so they enabled the massive globalization that you saw from the 1970s to date, and the conversations necessarily now are around deglobalization or re-globalization. And we're likely to see if perhaps a different kind of re-globalization. So from the 1970s until to date, the economies have been largely coordinated. And that has not gone away. It is still much in the fabric of economies. So if you are saying, for instance, there is a push for economies to be more inward-looking, then we would say that there is no need for institutions like the World Economic Forum. But there will still be a need for the institutions like the World Economic Forum. You know why? Because the institutions such as the World Bank still exist, institutions such as the UN still exist, and institutions like the IMF still exist, and other global institutions.
And the World Economic Forum is going nowhere.
They are enablers of those conversations. They assist the coordination of globalization. So they are levers into this vehicle, and they support that globalization. Of who is the beneficiary of this? I mean, that may be a political economic question that we can discuss. But the World Economic Forum will remain as an enabler of a globalized economic system.
So Mzwanele, South Africa's presence, and South Africa is there. What is South Africa selling? What is it in today's day and age that they can sell, that they want to sell, that they want to, you know, put up a billboard and say, this is us, this is South Africa? What's on that billboard?
I think that inspired by what you are saying, maybe they should begin to sell an inward-looking approach, not perhaps in the very vast way I'm looking at it. Of course, you still have regional relations, you still have intercontinental relations, and you still have those relations. But there should be a domestic story, and South Africa hasn't had that story in a very long time. South Africa remains the economy, of course, as we all know it, has been doing terrible for the past 20 years, you know, low growth, and it's been hard hit by all these problems such as the pandemic, the financial crisis, the war, and all of this thing. So, but we've also been hard hit because we have not had a story of our own, you know. We've not had a story for ourselves on how to deal with the issues of inequality, of underdevelopment, of poor infrastructure, of energy. And these remain our problems, you know, the environment that is not conducive for business, poor education and literacy, poor health care, and all other services that we've had. We've not crafted a story on how to we plan to deal with those things and therefore be able to sell it to the world. We go and lie to the world. We say we have a good story to tell. South Africa is a good investment destination. Surely, I mean, between you and I, it cannot be a good investment destination, whereas for many years, you have no guaranteed energy supply. For many years, your network systems are fragmented. For many years, you do not have equality amongst the opportunities that you offer, whether it's people or business, whatever the case may be. So that exists in South Africa, and you sort of not been able to sort of integrate the economy from its own corners and sort of give a master plan of how we move forward.
Mm.
So you don't have a story to sell to at the World Economic Forum.
Mm.
At this point in time, then they talk about the economic recovery plan.
Sure.
But, I mean, I think a year or so later, we can see that the economic recovery plan is basically not biting. And part of the reasons why the economic recovery plan may not be able to bite is because structural issues remain intact in South Africa, and there seems to be no will to resolve them.
Mm.
And there seems to be nothing being done about that.
Mm.
So it's quite sad that we get to this day and there is no story to tell.
Mm. Somebody might say that a few years ago there was a story to tell, Zwanele, and I'm reminded of a particular president, and you know, we have a good story to tell. Remember that one? And it was echoed by Cyril Ramaphosa as well, who of course didn't make Davos this particular year. But of course, that was the theme song of President Jacob Zuma throughout a lot of his years in office. We have a good story to tell, and somebody came up with that particular phrase, and that was also what was sold at the World Economic Forum, you know, at a particular time, at a particular moment. We have a good story to tell, even though at that particular time they were hollowing out the coffers and hollowing out, you know, the institutions while they were telling or suggesting that there was a good story to tell, you know, under the blankets, you know, something else was happening. So at some point, even though we might not have had a good story to tell, or we might have had a good story to tell, there was a bit of a slogan around South Africa in the sense of that's what we were taking around the world. We had a good story to tell, which was Jacob Zuma's theme song.
I think that what was being really said about that is that we had come at the beginning of the early 2000s, and South Africa was indeed, in fact, the entire global economy was promising. I remember some of the articles that would come in early 2000 was, it's Africa's time, because at those times we had sound economic policies, which were seen to be bearing fruit, you know, our policies such as GIA, ASGISA, and stuff like that.
Mm.
Even though people may criticize to say they were neoliberal and maybe they indeed are such policies.
Mm.
But there was this idea, for instance, that we're working towards something. And I remember, for instance, the economy grew for a long, not so much long time, but for consecutive quarters, to an extent that we grew at 6%, I think 2008, somewhere there. Mm. And we began to run the largest antiviral treatment for HIV and AIDS in the world.
Mm.
And we were beginning to build up our infrastructure, and we're expanding schools and literacy programs.
Mm.
It seemed that the energy situation was being resolved, because not only, of course, did we not have load shedding for many years, but also there was this push for nuclear, hydropower, wind power, and all of this stuff. And the idea of energy mix was gaining ground, you know, and we ran large social programs, people in the rural areas, the electricity, the water, access to these things, and stuff like that. Of course, the sad thing about it, like you say, on the other side, they were busy then, corruption was also finding feet and gaining ground, and a lot of other institutions were being eroded, and corruption indeed thrived as well from the early 2000 up to date.
Mm.
So, in a way, that may be what they must have meant about a good story to tell, because they ran such large social programs that seemed to be benefiting people, and they had these big plans for infrastructure. We had this big, and some of them did materialize, you know. There's been huge interchanges that have been built. There's been new power stations that have been built. There's been new universities that have been built. They've attempted to run these big programs in terms of healthcare, you know. And even education, you know, basic and higher education. There's been good benefits there. Women empowerment as well, youth empowerment as well. So there's been these good things as well, and there's been also these bad things, and perhaps that's what was being meant at the time.
Mm.
Today, I would struggle to tell you, you know, other than saying that perhaps there is a few of things that are resilient in our policies.
Mm.
But I think after the National Development Plan, the NDP, which seemed no one got interested in implementing, there's been no policy plan in South Africa. And the current administration has been coming with very little things such as Tumamina, just slogans like that, or the economic recovery plan, or the structural reform.
Mm. Which don't mean anything in the rest of the world. Mm.
Nothing we can sell to the world. Or no economic policy we can speak of. And it's so sad, you know, I normally think about this and think to myself that because of the absence of an economic policy, we can't speak on education, we can't speak on health, we can't speak on infrastructure development, we can't speak on empowerment, whether youth, women, children, LGBT, differently abled people, and other sectors in general. Because whatever we speak about needs to speak to an overarching economic macroeconomic plan, which of course will be domestically looking, but also have interest in the global economy at large. Unfortunately, we don't have that, and it's difficult to criticize any other thing, whether it's energy. You know, for instance, now, in the discussion around green transition, decarbonizing, where are we finding ourselves? We are probably followers of what the global multinationals are doing and the big giants in the economic sector are doing. Not because we know exactly what our economic plan. I tell you this, if we knew what our economic plan, we would know what kind of energy our economy requires. But, you know, so...
Yeah, pick something and stick with that. Pick something and stick with that. Whether it's the, you know, if you're going to go the green route, then pick it. And instead of the mixed messages that we constantly get about, you know, coal and other renewables, and then we're back here, and then, you know, Gwede Mantashe makes a particular statement around this one, and then, you know, we've got mixed messages all the time. They haven't picked something and stuck with it, and that's my view sometimes.
Yeah, you're right. You know, for instance, in this energy situation, they will say, okay, we're decarbonizing, lowering transmission and stuff like that, and going green. And then people say, oh, but what about jobs? What about all those mines, the mining towns, the economies in those places, and all of that stuff? You know, and I mean, I've not had much rebuttal to those questions, right? But if we did have an economic plan that is, no, we need coal because we are empowering so industries and that. Or we are going green and this is how we want to save jobs and so on and so forth, then we'll speak into that. But it would also be clear because our overarching economic plan would be probably be saying we want to see unemployment below 10%, you know. But we don't know. We are quite happy with unemployment between 25% and 35%.
Mm.
You know, it's not quite clear what our desire for unemployment is in South Africa. It's not quite clear what our desire for inequality is in South Africa. It's not quite clear what our growth aspirations are in the country, our education aspirations, infrastructure. And so, you know, so there's, like you're saying, there's always been this mixed messaging. And we've got a lot to say about a lot of things, but we've got no plan.
Zwaneli, here's the question that I also want to ask you. It doesn't help that our stature in the world also is declining, and I mean stature in the world as in, you know, other African countries have caught us up, where we were once leaders in particular industries and or even as a political voice, as a voice in the world. You know, other countries have caught us up and maybe are being heard more than we are being heard at this particular moment because of the kind of issues we have created back home, you know, politically and or criminally and or corruption and or in governance. And we, you know, it just seems also that where we do, you know, know, blunder. We blunder in quite huge ways. So in essence, where we were leading on the African continent in many, many ways, and we were that voice that was listened to from the African continent, and we spoke for the African continent, seemingly now countries like Rwanda, Kenya, you know, Nigeria, and others, lots of others, you know, have caught up, and not because they've caught up, because they have engaged and the economies are stronger. It's just because we've blundered along the way along massive, massive kind of mistakes. And so our voice no longer has that authority in the world. It doesn't help that we are no longer that country, does it? Because, you know, people once might have taken us very, very seriously. They might take us seriously now, but not as seriously as they once did.
You're very much right. We are not taken seriously. I can tell you, looking at the proceedings at the World Economic Forum, it's almost that Africa is nowhere.
Mm.
And like I said, there was a time where publications in Europe, in America would come. It's Africa's time. And there was so much interest to this gateway to the entire continent, which was South Africa, you know. And that interest is gone. Like you say, you see a lot of Kenya, you see Burundi, Ghana, Nigeria, and other African countries that are making their way into this global institution, whether the IMF.
And the leaders are quite stately now. You know, people are taking their leaders quite seriously now, where, you know, before it might have just been, you know, some guy who was elected on a basis of questionable results. Now, you know, these countries are taken quite seriously with their leaders who are quite prominent in these international spaces.
Yes. I mean, for instance, it's often the type of development that China and Asia has made in North Africa, in East Africa, is enormous, you know. And I think that South Africa, even going into the formulation of BRICS, thought that they would be beneficiaries of the emerging economic bloc. Mm. And they have not, you know. We have not seen the massive investment and development that we thought we'd see, that we've been promised we are going to see. Across these administrations, at least the past two, you know, the Zuma administration and the Ramaphosa administration, we've not seen that. But the amount of development that has been happening in West Africa, East Africa, and the Northern African continent, from the other emerging markets, have been enormous. And then this built-up infrastructure and the simplification of business and this delivery of required resources for human development has been much witnessed in the other parts of the continent, and very much less in our side. Mm. And we've obviously had the problems of energy in our country, where we cannot promise the sustainability of energy, and security also in our country has become a problem. Mm. And the third thing is that even that is now being exacerbated by issues of climate change. Mm. You know, so we've got to turn around things definitely as South Africa and begin to developmental path. And I suspect that may mean that we need to craft a different alternative, and look at and not shy away from the fact that we are capable, and amongst ourselves we espouse a great number of good leaders who have got the right capabilities, who can lead the country forward. Because it's also embarrassing what we have been portraying to the world, that we cannot have ethical leaders, that our leaders are corrupt, and they cannot build schools and roads, and they render services to the people and maintain electricity with so much resources, intellectual, human capital, as well as mineral and those offered by the natural environment.
So that must be You know, Mzwanele, that must be, as you mentioned it, I'm thinking, you know, I love the way that you've put it. It must be an abnormality in the rest of the world when you look at a country of South Africa's stature, whereas we do have the resources, we do have the funds, we do have, you know, the kind of things to make us one of those countries that would rank, you know, as a top country, and yet we do not have the energy, and yet we are plagued by corruption, and yet we are plagued by unethical leadership, and yet, you know, it's not because we don't have these resources in abundance. It's the opposite. We have them in abundance. We're just that country at the moment.
I don't know what this phenomenon is, but maybe people in the social sciences space, philosophy and stuff like that may have a term for it. But we are held at ransom by a group of people who have got no idea of what should be happening. And that is just the truth of it. And a number of us, so many, and it's embarrassing, hence I'm saying it's embarrassing, because so many of us can and are able to do the work that is required. The third thing that you may notice, and I'm sure you may be aware, has been an exodus of young talent educated by that government, by this government, educated by this government, by the policies of this government, great policies that have been educating this youth, but they've educated them for other economies. So doctors, teachers, lawyers, chartered accountants, and other professions are leaving South Africa and finding space in Asia, finding space in Europe, finding space in America, but Africa. And we've got to answer that ourselves in South Africa as well. And so how have we been able, our education system, the higher education in particular, how has it been able to educate so many young people, maybe 3-4 times than we did in 1994? How has it been able to educate so many people, but there has been no economy for them to work on?
Sure.
And government says, Vukuzenzele, create your own thing. You can't Vukuzenzele when there's no electricity. You can't Vukuzenzele when there's no road to source resources. You can't Vukuzenzele when government departments cannot register your business. You can't Vukuzenzele when there's no finance to support your initiative. You can't Vukuzenzele when the Reserve Bank acts contrary to the country's aspirations for development and growth. You can't Vukuzenzele when there's no mentorship and programs that are put in place to drive development and expand the economy. So then you've got what they trying to then say as politicians, it's a skills mismatch. Maybe you want to call it a skills mismatch. I call it an economy that is not ready for the people it educates.
Mzwanele, I'm going to thank you, sir, for joining me at this late hour here on Power Perspective. That's Mzwanele Ntswanti. Thank you so much for joining me here, economist at UNISA. Thank you, sir.
Thank you so much for having me, and thanks to all the listeners of Power.
That's Mzwanele Ntswanti, economist at UNISA.
You've been listening to a Power 98.7 podcast. For more podcasts, visit power987.co.za or subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.